This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. And thanks to Avery Davidson, who did a stellar job filling in for yours truly on Friday. And we're back in a huge way with Mark Leibovich, our leadoff guest for the week, one of the best reporters in America. He's worked at the highest levels of journalism in our country, the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the Atlantic. And he wrote the best book ever about the town that he inhabits, this town, about Washington, D.C. But Mark is getting huge plaudits and nice reviews and big sales for his latest work. Thank you for your servitude. It's about Donald Trump's Washington. And good morning to you, Mark Leibovich.
Good to be with you, Jim.
Nice to talk with you once again. It's been a few years, but congrats on the book. And Donald Trump, certainly the man from Gotham City, took the Beltway by storm. We know it in our congressional delegation, in which all but two members have refused to acknowledge that that he lost the election, that his might continues. And that's largely the focus of your book. Yeah. How did this happen?
Yeah, I mean, basically, I wanted to focus. I mean, there have been so many books and so much written about Donald Trump's White House and all the things that went on there that we're learning and we're still learning on the January 6th Commission and so forth. I wanted to focus on basically the party that continues to make him possible, the people who know better, frankly, who were leaders of the Republican Party, like Kevin McCarthy and Lindsey Graham and Steve Scalise and Mitch McConnell and so forth, people who I think in many cases in private will disparage him, who don't have a lot of respect for Donald Trump, but at least in public will kowtow to him because he knows that he's very, very popular with the base and they need his blessing to be reelected and to be in the mix. And so that's essentially what the focus of the book was. I think it's been the story of Washington for the last 6-7 years. It was like this big, weird carnival at the Trump Hotel, which was like really the center of Republican Washington for a long time until, you know, it changed hands recently. So, I wanted to help sort of tell readers what this looked like, what it felt like. And it was quite a carnival. And it looks like we might, you know, be on a collision course for a Donald Trump, you know, maybe Joe Biden rematch in a couple of years.
Well, there's some moving parts. There could be indictments. We don't know. But in Washington, it does look like, at least until further notice, despite our friend James Carville's protestations to the contrary, that Biden and Trump are both looking to run again, and the election is not that far away, is it?
No, it's not. And you know, I don't think a lot of people, no matter who, what party you're in, if you're an independent or whatever, would be excited by that prospect. But yeah, I mean, I think right now the party, both parties have a lot of discontent inside of it, but they also are sort of a path of least resistance, and they kind of go with what's familiar with them. And Donald Trump is someone who is going to take what is given to him. And one thing we've learned about Trump is he's not going to, like, put the brakes on himself. And also, the leaders in the Republican Party are not going to stand up to him, by and large. I mean, they have sort of made their bed with him, and they continue to ride with this guy who was defeated a few years ago. I mean, whether they admit it or not, was impeached twice, left office, you know, under pretty tenuous circumstances, obviously. And so, here we are. So no one's going to stop him. And I tried to tell the story of the people who have made these calculations and who are probably pretty cynical about it and who are not terribly happy about the situation, but are continuing to enable Donald Trump and sort of makes him the front runner to be the nominee for the third time in 12 years in 2024.
Well, he could run again, and he probably will, and he could win again. He probably won't, but that's not a given either. And he did not win the overall vote against Hillary Clinton either. He's like at a negative 10 million right now in overall votes. The irony among many, Mark Leibovich, is that he could end up losing the overall vote again and yet winning the election again. And that would be 0-for-3 as far as actual votes, but 2-for-3 in the Electoral College.
Yeah, absolutely. If he gets back to the White House, I mean, it's not like he would have a check and balance of running for re-election. I mean, he would have nothing really to stop him. I think it's not as if the Democrats don't have big problems either. I mean, Joe Biden isn't exactly in the strongest position either. So, I mean, yeah, get Trump into a general election, anything can happen, and you know, we'll see. But, yeah, I mean, the system is not perfect, and, you know, we've seen that, you know, the popular vote doesn't always carry the day here.
The book is Thank You for Your Servitude. It's about the Trump years and the people around him. As I stated, exceptional reviews. The New York Times, the headline read, Why Do So Many Republicans Tolerate Donald Trump? Another one from NPR's All Things Considered. The headline, Blind Loyalty is Helping Sustain Trump's Power in the Republican Party. And then in The Atlantic, a familiar publication for you, The Most Pathetic Men in America. Now, as you say, some of these people will tell you privately one thing, and then publicly they will state another, and they're doing it for political survival, I would think. But does that make them pathetic?
Yeah. I think in some ways it makes them two-faced. It doesn't make them leaders, that's for sure. And to me, that the working title of this book, Jim, as I was sort of going through the processes, they all knew better, because they do. I mean, if there are Republicans listening to this, and I'm sure there are, you know, Louisiana's a pretty red state. One thing I think people need to know is that the Republicans of Washington who go on TV and who sort of suck up to Donald Trump in public have a great deal of contempt in many cases for him in private. They will disparage him. They don't have a lot of respect for him. They fear him. And so you're not really seeing their honest assessment of the president that they are essentially kowtowing to. So, you know, to me, that's not honorable. And it's also a big reason why, you know, they just haven't shown much leadership and why the party is in the condition that it is today. And, you know, Trump lost the House, the Senate, the White House. He's the first president who could do that in one term in over 100 years. He was impeached twice, and you know, yeah, but no one ever stood up to him. So, again, he sort of keeps going. And I think it's largely a product of the cowardice of people who could choose another leader but who don't.
What was the most stunning revelation among many? And you're covering a man who, I would say billions, is probably trillions of words have been written about him, but you found some new information. Yeah. What was the most revelatory?
Again, I think a lot of it was just hearing how these people speak, these, you know, apparent, you know, allies of the president speak about him in private. You know, when you're covering Washington, when you're covering politics, you're always going to find people who speak differently before different audiences, right? I mean, that's kind of an occupational hazard, and it's not a big surprise, but I have, in all my years, 25 years covering Washington and covering politics, I've never seen such a big yawning gap between what people will say privately about someone and what they will say publicly about someone, which to me is the definition of cowardice, but it's also, I've never seen that big a gap here. So I think that in itself was, was a huge surprise. And look, I think another surprise is it continues. I mean, no one, you know, Republican or Democrat or independent or whatever, after January 6th thought that he was going to survive this. And lo and behold, within 8 days of Biden taking over and Trump leaving Washington, Kevin McCarthy was down in Mar-a-Lago kissing the ring. Mitch McConnell saying he would support the nominee, and away we go again. So, it's pretty stunning to me that he survived that, but he did, and here we are.
And 10 years ago, just a decade ago, the Republicans nominated Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Now, today, I would imagine many Democrats would vote for that ticket, especially if the opponent was Joe Biden. But the Republican Party went from that to Trump, and now the front runner to possibly unseat him in the Republican ranks isn't a moderate. It's a guy maybe even to the right of Trump, a true believer in Ron DeSantis. What's happened to the Republican Party?
I mean, the Republican Party has been largely kind of remade into the image of Trump. And, you know, everyone, you know, refers to DeSantis as like the Trump alternative. And I guess he is to some degree. But ultimately, he is very Trump derivative, right? He modeled himself after Trump. He, you know, his whole campaign for governor of Florida was due to, you know, I'm the biggest fanboy of Donald Trump. I mean, I read bedtime stories to my infant son about building a wall. I mean, it was an absurd campaign, and it worked, right? And so, you know, Ron DeSantis is just, yeah, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, is just, I mean, he's Trump Jr. And yeah, I mean, I think now almost, you know, 7-8 years into this experiment, I mean, the party still remains very much in the image of Donald Trump. And, you know, Mitt Romney is very much an outlier as a Trump critic. Paul Ryan's sort of out of the business, out of the game. And, yeah, it's just like it's been amazing to see the whole shift happen.
Well, what do you think happens next?
Oh, boy. I think, you know, if past his prologue, Donald Trump will run, he will win the nomination, and then we got a real slug. You know, again, both parties have big, big, big problems. I think they're both weak. I think Americans are extremely hungry for something new. And, look, I'm really willing and hope I'm surprised by like, some new blood coming in and actually having an invigorated race with some new ideas on both sides. But, again, I mean, we seem to be in a pretty risk-averse place as a country and both parties, you know.
Well, we do have to roll, but congratulations, Mark Leibovich. The book is Thank You for Your Servitude. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Our guest is John Schroeder, the state treasurer, former state lawmaker, a man from a neighboring parish to Governor John Bel Edwards, a military veteran. They have many things in common, and if John Schroeder has his way, they'll have a lot more in common very soon because Treasurer Schroeder is running for governor in what looks like it will be a crowded field, but you never know. And he is with us to talk about that and much more. And as I stated going in, things are better than might be expected in Louisiana because our state has been swimming in COVID money, which will go away with the next governor. And then we'll have to go back to the old days in which every dollar is scarce and hard decisions have to be made about what is cut and what is not. But we'd like to hear from you as always, if you're so inclined, 877-217-5757 and Talk Louisiana, talk at talklouisiana.org. Treasurer Schroeder, good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, sir.
Nice to hear your voice. Tell us about the governor, the quest for the governorship. Is it still on? I hear you driving. You must be headed to some part of Louisiana.
I'm actually in St. Tammany today. I'm paying for all my athletic days, Jim. I've been going to physical therapy for about 3 weeks now. As his body ages, all those old injuries I had are coming back, so I'm having some shoulder issues. So anyway, I'm driving to my office.
All right. Well, you haven't fallen off a bicycle lately, I hope.
No, sir. No, and I did not.
Believe me, I've done that, and I didn't fare as well as the president. I broke my femur in 2006, and Joe Biden's not the only guy to ever fall off a bicycle. But you look fit. You're relatively young. You're not an old guy, and you're giving every indication you're running for governor. But you, as I stated, we don't know the field, but I would suspect it will be most likely a crowded field. Does that dissuade you in any way?
No, I tell people, you know, my wife and I, decisions based on my time, our time, it really is relevant to, you know, who else is in the race. It's more about where I'm at this stage of my life, what we have going on personally. And, you know, it's good timing for Ellie and I. So it really isn't about who else is running.
Have you been able to raise money?
Well, I think if you see the campaign finance reports that came out in February, considering, you know, where we started from, we've had very good success.
When you say very good success, you've raised more than $1 million.
Yeah, we raised over $1 million last year, and we're on clip to surpass that this year.
And to put that in perspective, John Schroeder has raised more money than I believe Luke Mixon or Gary Chambers have, and they're in an election that's just a few months away. So obviously people are writing checks for you, but you've got Billy Nungesser, who's, I think, in, Jeff Landry, who's in, both of whom, like you, are statewide elected officials. How many statewide elected officials can one race stand?
Well, it looks like a bunch. Because, you know, the good thing is I think change is good, and you'll have a lot of change. You know, you're going to have a lot of races. It's good for the economy. It has a lot of good things that come out of it.
What are the issues? What are the major issues for the people of Louisiana?
You know, I would tell you the whether it's a governor's race or not, I mean, the issues are the issues. You know, obviously crime is a major problem across this state. I don't care where you go and who you talk to, especially in the metro areas where most of our jobs are. And it's just it's on the top of mind everywhere you go. Crime is by far the issue that everyone talks about. Of course, I think the closer you live to a populated area, the more you're going to hear about it. Although I live in St. Tammany Parish, one of the safest places in the state, but we're in the New Orleans media market. So, I think obviously education is an issue and will long be an issue. Every ill will that we have in this state stems from a lack of education, and we've got to figure that out somehow.
Well, I recall interviewing you, more than 8 years ago, and you were assessing Governor Edwards, who won, and you and he go back a long ways, and I stated you're from neighboring parishes, you have a lot in common, but politically you're on different sides, and you said, Jim, he's a military guy, he looks at the world differently than I do. I look at it as a business person. Do you think that business people, of which you are one, have an inherent advantage?
Well, I don't know if you have an inherent advantage as much as you look at things differently. And that was my point. I approach it like a business. I'm always looking at new, creative, different ways to do things. Differently than your competitors. You have to be very open to change and be able to do that very quickly, invest the dollars it takes to do that so you can perform better. We don't do that as a government, Jim. I sit on a couple task force now that will be coming up soon. In fact, one's already met. But to help modernize electronic payments in this state. This is just an example. In my business, we'll take payments. We don't even take checks hardly anymore. Everything's through electronic payments. You know, in Louisiana, you can't pay online using Venmo, PayPal, Venmo or Zelle, any of the, you know, Google Pay or whatever. You cannot do that in Louisiana yet. And I don't get that. You know, we're behind the times. Cryptocurrency is a big deal to the next generation. And I just think the state needs to position itself to better utilize these technologies. You would in your business world, because it would cost you money if you didn't. But we just don't think that way. And that's the difference between having business people in government and not, because I want to perform whether it's on my nickel or your nickel.
877-217-5757 for Treasurer John Schroeder. Barry in Mid-City. Barry, you're on.
Thank you, Jim. And Treasurer Schroeder, how would you appeal to our citizens of Louisiana to effect change within our people? We are good people, and I hope we all want to have such change. But what would your key ingredient be, please?
Well, look, I didn't come on today to talk about my potential run for governor. But I will tell you this. I go to work every day, just like you go to work every day. People want honest, sincere people who go to work every day, just like they do. And that's a problem in government. There's a total mistrust. There's a big lack of confidence. I used to say people were losing faith in this process, and I would say today they've lost faith in this process. We don't do the little things well, and you know, I would work very hard, as I do every day as your treasurer, to restore faith in this process, no matter what part of the state you're from, rural Louisiana, metro New Orleans, metro Shreveport, Lafayette, it doesn't matter. But I think, as I say often, you know, there are people who go to work every day with the right intentions to do what's best for the citizens of Louisiana every day. I think more than anything, it's restoring some faith and hope that we can do things. We don't do the little things well anymore. You know, I was taught as a young business person, you have to do the little things, or the big things won't happen. They'll take care of themselves when you're knocking out the little things. So I think it's basics, and we better return to some basics, because we're losing out as a state.
877-217-5757. John Schroeder, we'll pick up on those statewide online payment options. A few questions online about that. Also, unclaimed property under Treasurer Schroeder has gone up, up, and away over what happened with his predecessor. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org. And John Schroeder, the treasurer, is with us. And one of the things he touted in our first segment with him was these online payment options that he believes the state should utilize. But a listener asked a good question about fraud. Do we have the necessary precautions that the state won't be a victim of some fraud, which, as we know, with the money that flows through accounts, could be a big deal? What are your thoughts? Treasurer Schroeder?
Yeah, I'm here, Jim. You know, you asked me the difference between being in business and what does that bring to the table. In business, you have to take some risk, because it's not a perfect world, okay? It's amazing to me how difficult people want to be when it comes to changing things. I went to Atlanta, Jim, on a trip on I'm helping the state firefighters retirement system on some property they own in three states. So I had to go to Arizona and Georgia. I got two pieces of property for them under contract. While I was there at the Atlanta airport, no cash, no zero. If you want to buy something at the airport, you can't use cash. I went to the Atlanta Braves game one night. If you want to buy a Coke or a hot dog, no cash. I just got back from Phoenix, Arizona last week. No cash in the airport. No cash in the stadium when we went to the Diamondbacks. So, I mean, I said this last week. It's like we're back in the Stone Age, like the Flintstones. You are always going to have fraud. You know, the Main Street Recovery Grant program we ran, we had a 1.3% fraud rate. The national average was 7 to 8. So you just have to do what you have to do to fight against that stuff, and then go get these fraud people. But I'm not going to not change because I'm afraid of some negatives. You just got to deal with the negatives. But why should you stand in line for 2 hours at the DMV or for any other service in Louisiana, when you have the ability to go online and do it? You can pay online. You know, we can make it so much more efficient for the taxpayer and make it quicker. I mean, it sort of blows me away. You can't even have a Zoom meeting by law in Louisiana. Our government boards, and I'm not talking about the legislature, I'm talking about government boards. There's about 7,000 people appointed to boards across Louisiana. You can't even have a Zoom meeting. You have to come to Baton Rouge, or you have to go to wherever that location is. We're paying for people to stay in hotels. We're paying for their per diem. We're paying for the space. We could save a lot of money if you just let people have these committee meetings via Zoom. But by law, you cannot do that. You can only do it in a active emergency or through the declaration of the governor. There's a lot of things we can do better.
Your number is 877-217-5757. Please be brief in your remarks to Treasurer Schroeder. And on Jefferson Highway has been waiting the longest. And you're on with the treasurer. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to ask a question that I'm going to ask of every candidate, because I'm interested in the answer.
What's your question?
And that is, what is whether it? you whether you believe that Donald Trump or Joseph Biden won the election.
All right. That's a question I'm sure you've heard a time or two. Is it relevant? Well, and what's your answer?
I guess when I become a candidate, that we'll have to answer that question.
Well, I mean, isn't it apparent who won the election?
Well, look, Jim, I don't know. I hear it from people all the time. You hear all kind of things. The president's the president.
The president's the president. So are you saying that Mr. Biden won?
Jim, like I said, I'm not going to get into.
I don't think it's a hard question, John. I love you, but I don't think this is a hard question. This is a pretty easy one.
Well, is he the president today?
Yeah.
At least by laws, he's serving.
Do you think the election was stolen?
I think there's absolutely some issues in voter fraud. There's no question about it.
There would have to be a whole lot of voter fraud, and it'd all have to go one way for a man to erase three states won by more than 10,000 votes, every one of them. That's a lot of voter fraud.
I don't disagree. I think there is voter fraud. I think there's laws clearly. If you listen to the long, long hours of debate and questions on the task force, obviously that's things that need to happen. I am not the expert in that space.
877-217-5757 is your number. Richard in Mid-City. Richard, please be brief. What's your question for Treasurer Schroeder?
Back to what the gentleman was talking about earlier. Through a comedy of errors, my car insurance got canceled. I found out after the fact. And I went to go ahead and follow through on the letter. So I called the 225 number and kept getting you press option 3, kept getting everyone is busy serving other customers. Please hang up and try again later. This went on for 4 days. Went by the DMV on Independence.
All right. Well, the treasurer, at least until he becomes governor, is not directly involved with the Department of Motor Vehicles. But it dovetails with what you're saying, that I think you were saying the state has a lot of work to do to catch up to the modern age. Is that fair?
Oh, there's no question. I hear it constantly. And I think we can use technology to lessen people's waits. I can't tell you how many people will call me. Jim, most of my phone calls I get as state treasurer have nothing to do with Department of Treasury. You know, and it's typically either they having trouble getting a hold of somebody, getting somebody to answer the phone. I mean, a lot of the things people are calling for are government required practices. So let's make it easier for them to do it.
Dan downtown. Dan, please be brief. You're on with John Schroeder.
Yeah. Schroeder, you think that there's any possibility we'll ever get state elected officials that just don't totally pander to Donald Trump?
All right. Well, I don't know that all of our statewide elected officials are doing that, but I know where you're going, and I think it's a topic for another day, but the treasurer, we just had a guest say, look, we live in a state in which 85% of the white people voted for Donald Trump. If you're a politician and you're a Republican, you obviously, I would think, and you can answer this or not, you have to pay some heed to what Donald Trump says. Is that a fair assessment?
Look, I think it's fair to say that Donald Trump is popular in Louisiana. If you go look at the numbers, look, Jim, you know me pretty well. I don't get into politics. You know, I don't study it. That's not my forte. My forte is, as a business guy and entrepreneur, is solving problems. And that's what I do every day. I do not sit around, believe it or not, having coffee, talking about politics. I talk about Donald Trump maybe once a month. It's just not what I do. But in Louisiana, he's clearly is very popular. So I get the anxiety from people. I hear it all the time.
All right. And the listener says, look, Jim, you're not talking to John Kennedy. You're talking to John Schroeder. And as we know, your predecessor did like politics, and he's pretty good at it. Here's Charles Tate saying to you, you're right that crime's on everybody's mind throughout the state. Were you ever in law enforcement?
Yes. I spent 6.5+ years in the military, in law enforcement as a narcotics detective. I have a strong passion for it. I tell people crime, you have to spend as much time preventing crime as enforcing crime. But it's a huge problem that we face. And as a business owner, and it's just something that's on the top of everybody's minds, a lot of concerns. My wife does not want to go to New Orleans anymore. I mean, it's just, it's a problem, Jim, that's going to have to be addressed. And we're never going to get Louisiana, rising up to all the bad lists.
Now, I mentioned, and a listener has, actually two listeners have asked me to follow up. John Kennedy did a good job as Secretary of Revenue and then as Treasurer, spotlighting the unclaimed property program. And he was, of course, touting how well it worked. But you have not touted how well it's worked under your watch. How well is it working?
Well, going back to what we first talked about, the very first question you asked me, how do I use my business or do I think I have an advantage? You do from this aspect. We have blown up the unclaimed property program. We've increased it by over 600%. We use technology to be able to go back in the past and get money to people that have been sitting in there for 18, 20 years. So utilizing technology, we have just increased the outcomes incredibly.
Please be brief. David in Atlanta, and just give a question. We're short on time. What's your question for John?
Mr. Schroeder, I think the people of Louisiana have a right to know the mental fitness of a high school.
What's your question?
Officer.
What's your question?
Well, I think if Mr. Are you an American first or
All right, okay. Now, he, of course, is zoning in on the previous discussion. You're going to get this, as will the other candidates, no doubt about it. But you're a big boy. I'm sure you're ready for it. At least I would hope you are.
Well, look, Jim, I've told you this several times now. It's just not time. The time is coming, but it's not today. And it's probably not tomorrow. Once we get in the early next year or late this year, yes. But right now, look, I have a lot of things to do, a lot of things that I'm concentrating on. I'm not concentrating on campaigning.
Well, you've raised a lot of money. You've got, I think, a viable chance. But as we know, there are going to be several people in the race, and it'll take some heavy lifting to win. But we hope you're with us more often. Thank you for coming on today. Always a pleasure.
You're
John Schroeder. Thank you, sir. We'll be back to talk about the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board with Charles Lucier and Brian Blackwell right after this message. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're in our final segment, and we have Charles Lucier. 21 years he's covered education in Louisiana. He does so for the newspaper of record, The Advocate and Picayune. And in East Baton Rouge Parish, we spent a lot of time focusing on congressional redistricting, but there's a huge, huge debate that is ongoing with qualifying 2 days away about what's going to happen with the districts for the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board. And with us also is Brian Blackwell, who's representing four plaintiffs. And as I mentioned, qualifying starts Wednesday. And right now, what kind of a map are we going to have? Well, it looks like we're going to have the existing map. But is that a given, Brian?
Well, if you call the clerk of court's office, they won't tell you as of yet what map they're going to use, which is going to make it very difficult for potential candidates to qualify.
So what does that mean?
We really don't know yet. I guess we'll find out on Wednesday whenever folks show up over there to qualify
well,
for the
election. And a listener notes that uncertainty often helps those who are in power. Is that fair?
I think it is because it prevents people from, if there were 11 districts, there would be probably more interest in folks running in a new district, so to speak. So I think it prevents those people from putting their hat in the ring.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Charles Lucier is with us and Brian Blackwell. And at one point it looked like we might go to 11 districts. Now we're back to 9. Based on your review of this, Charles, there's obviously more than a few people who don't believe it's a case in which the districts are drawn properly. What's your take?
Well, it was an exceedingly strange process. And Brian mentioned that, you know, the clerk of courts won't say what map we're doing. The default map at this point legally is the 9-member school board plan from 2014. So the uncertainty is that this is still in the courts and it's not clear how they're going to rule. Brian is leading 4 plaintiffs who have sued in state court, but there's apparently going to be a federal case as well any day now. And so we just don't quite know. You know, we could have qualifying and we could still have this election in doubt. It is very strange to go through this entire process. They spent at least $100,000 putting together these maps and now fighting them in court. And here we are. We have maps that were done 8 years ago.
And as far as how those maps are drawn, are they drawn well, or could there be some enhancements?
Well, so a lot of this stems from what happened in 2014. So we have back 2012, the school board passed, they had an 11-member setup, and they were going to, they went through the, back then you had to get it pre-cleared by the Justice Department. The maps all went through. Everything was fine. And then a year later, the Supreme Court threw out part of the Voting Rights Act, which required preclearance by the Justice Department. 2014, the school board, on the even election, decided they wanted to shrink their size from 11 to 9 members. And this was very controversial at the time. There was a case in court, and the school board won. We had an election, so we reduced to 9 members. Well, there have been people who've been upset about this ever since. And a lot of this whole effort after the most recent census, there's a big push to try to return to 11 members. And, you know, there was also on top of this, the parish has become more African-American over the last decade. And there was a big desire among, you know, certain parts of the parish to have additional representation on the board. So there was a big dogfight over the past year. But it's interesting. We went through that whole fight, and then the lawsuit was rather novel. And I can let Brian speak to that. But there's the actual reason that the map came in trouble was not on anyone's radar screen when this was being developed that I knew of.
Well, what's the basic complaint for the plaintiffs, Brian? And can you get a little bit closer?
Yeah, the law requires that the school board accomplish redistricting plans without splitting precincts, except in a situation where it can't be done. And so there may be situations where it can't be done. In this case, basically the school board adopted a process for the nomination of plans. 2 plans were nominated. 1 plan split precincts. 1 plan didn't. And despite the legal requirement that they adopt a plan that does not split precincts, that's the exact one that they adopted. And so the claim was basically you got 2 plans, 1 that doesn't and 1 that does. You picked the wrong one. And you should have picked the one that didn't split precincts.
Well, we have a city, a parish, if you will, that it votes overwhelmingly Democratic when it's a parish-wide vote. This is a parish that went for Barack Obama twice, went for Hillary Clinton, went for Foster Campbell over homegrown Bill Cassidy. I go down the list. This is a parish in which actually it was Foster Campbell over John Kennedy. It was Mary Landrieu over Bill Cassidy. But it would seem that most of the members, based on voting patterns, should be Democrats. And probably African-American Democrats. Right now, of the 9 members, what's the configuration, Charles?
We have, there are 5 Republicans, 4 Democrats, 5 whites, 4 blacks. And that would almost certainly continue if we go with the same map, though it has changed some over time. At least a couple of the districts have become closer to swing districts. So there is a chance that one or both might flip, you know.
What would happen with an 11-member district?
Well, it depends on how they draw the plan. Now, the plan he's referenced, that Mr. Blackwell's referencing, would have created 6 majority African-American districts and 5 majority white districts, and would have likely been 6 Democrat, 5 Republican. The state court, Judge Smith, put that map in, said that should be the map, but then the First Circuit Court of Appeal has put a stay on that. They're going to hear arguments with August 10th, but that's going to be after qualifying. So it's possible that map will still win the day at some point. But, you know, this election, there's still a lot of question marks about what's going to happen.
Do you have hope for your plaintiffs that at the 11th hour, and literally the 11th hour, things might work your way? Brian?
Well, the real question is with qualifying closed, if we are successful, the court would have to stay the election, which is going to require there to be a special election at some point, which I think the next special election is in February of next year, March of next year. And so, you know, the timeliness of the Court of Appeals involvement has been less than you would expect in an election type dispute where things generally move pretty fast.
Well, I mentioned, and a listener says you should talk some more about the way the parish has evolved. Not only did Joe Biden win here and Barack Obama, but also we've had 5 straight black Democratic mayors going back to 2004 when Kip Holden won. He won 3 times. Sharon Weston Broome has won 2. John Bell Edwards carried this parish by overwhelming margins. He got 68% of the votes in East Baton Rouge Parish against David Vitter. So why do we have this parish, which is clearly a Democratic parish, a blue dot in a red sea, with these kinds of issues regarding the school board and also the Metro Council, which is the same kind, basically the same issue that we're talking about right now? Charles, any thoughts?
Well, we're a parish in transition, and so we don't have at large Metro Council, we don't have at large school board districts. We have community districts that reflect areas of the parish, and so, you know, the population isn't evenly distributed, and a lot of the growth has been in the south part of the parish. And so part of the weirdness of the map that's likely to go into place, 2014 map, is you're going to have school board members north of Florida Boulevard who have a lot fewer people to represent and people south of I-10 who have a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so they call it malapportion. You know, that's what this process is supposed to correct, but it doesn't look like it's corrected it yet. But yeah, I mean, we have a parish in transition, so it has historically been your elected bodies have been majority white, and that's changing. Now, there was a big fight to change that more quickly, and it doesn't look like it's won so far, but it's not going to end, and we're going to keep seeing these fights as the parish becomes more African-American, as it probably becomes more Democratic.
And it is largely about race, isn't it, Brian?
Certainly. And, you know, listening to Charles, reminds me of, you know, we used to do everything at large. And it's just interesting that the districts were set up to enhance the ability to elect blacks. And now it's really impairing their ability to be elected.
Well, it's all about power, as we know. And in this case, the courts will rule, but quite often that comes down to which court you're before. What about the venue?
Well, we don't get a choice. You know, this is a case.
Is it a good venue?
I think so. I think all of the judges on the First Circuit are very good and will give us a fair listen and hopefully give us the right result.
Signature support for First Financial Tax and Accounting and Jerry Lane Chevrolet.